This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Certainly is. Saturday morning tradition here on CJAD 800. I'm Ken Connors, and on the line is Walter Assey. Walter, good morning.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm very good. Walter from Renovco offering his experience and a free hour's worth of advice here at 514-790-0800. How was your week, Walter?
My week is great. I'm in sunny Punta Cana on a special project, so it can't be any better.
What? I'm afraid we've lost the line, Walter. We cannot talk to you anymore.
I don't blame you.
Very nice. Well, working on the job, very nice. Working while on, you're mixing business and pleasure, right?
There you go. There you go. I'm cheating a little bit, that's for sure.
Well, listen, thanks for making time for us this morning. We certainly appreciate it. We're going to put you to work right now. So put your drink down we'll get to the phone. First up is Arthur out in Beaconsfield. Arthur, good morning.
Good morning, Walter and Ken. Thank you very much for taking my call.
All right.
I have a question with regards to installation of vinyl planks. I'm planning on renovating, doing a little refreshing of my laundry room. And I'm going to buy basically 1-foot by 4-foot vinyl boards that glue down to the floor. My current situation in the laundry room is I have a half-inch plywood that's nailed down to the floorboards. And on top of the half-inch plywood, I have linoleum that's glued down. And I'm wondering, should I pull up? There's no way I'm going to be able to separate the linoleum from the plywood. So I'm wondering if I should pull up the half-inch plywood, get down to the floorboards, or should I just put a quarter-inch new sheet of plywood on top of the linoleum and basically screw that down, and then that gives me my base to put my vinyl planks on?
Okay, that's a great question. When you're going to, for sure, you're not going to add glue to the linoleum floors, because that won't stick and that will give you trouble. You need something more abrasive for the glue to adhere properly. As far as adding more coats or more layers on the floor, that is fine as long as you're not becoming way too high as a sill from, you know, the transition to the other roofs. So you keep on adding layers and layers, and some all of a sudden you have an inch sill difference between the two rooms, and that doesn't become very appealing or safe, for that matter. I'm always bigger fan of taking, if you have just half an inch, just take it out, re-screw properly the original subfloor or the floorboards, because if you do have floorboards, I mean they're the older style subfloor, usually they are nailed down. And with time, these nails start to come out and they start squeaking and moving and so on and so forth. So by you doing that, you'll have access to the original virgin subfloor. You can screw it down properly, have a nice solid base, and then you could add your, you know, half an inch plywood, new plywood, whatever you want to put on top. And then you'll have a nice bed to lay your vinyl tiles. That is always the best practices. I know in a perfect world, it doesn't always work that way. But if you can, you have access to that, that will be the best.
Yes, I do have access to that. I also, one thing I forgot to mention is that my laundry room is on the ground floor. And below the laundry room is an unfinished basement. So one of the things I was thinking of doing was to basically screw down through the existing linoleum, half-inch plywood floorboards into the 2x12 joist as well to tighten it up that way. But I understand what you're saying, that it probably the better approach is to pull up the old plywood and start from start afresh.
Yeah, that's correct. The okay. other thing is, when you do that, if you need to level the floor, you have that option to do better leveling of the floor, especially when you are installing vinyl floors. So if you are able to, you know, to start from the bottom up, and you see that you could, you know, so there's not much more flexibility in doing things, especially in a laundry room. You don't want your floor to be uneven. Your washer is going to start shaking and baking in no time, you know.
Yes.
So okay. it's just, you know, it's just a better, cleaner way of doing things. That's why we always find.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help this morning.
All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bye now. Where we're going next? Oh, we're going to talk to Ron. Hi, Ron.
Hi, guys. Hey, Walter. Heat pump guy.
It's Ron, the heat pump guy, Walter.
Yeah, 3 weeks in a row.
Oh, Ron, the heat pump guy. Yeah, you're very popular now, so you're a regular now.
Yeah.
So you got some good news, Ron.
Yeah, I phoned Walter at the office, but he was out there. I guess he's gone away.
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to cover everything. They're not charging me, so they're going to they're just waiting for pieces.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
And
so, Ron,
Go ahead.
We'll
now, I had the tech come in here, so I guess I shouldn't ask for that. Even though my heat pump didn't work this year, and I was away for 4 months last year, so I don't know. You know, it was a one-year labor aspect. But, I mean, as you've seen, it's a Lennox. It shouldn't have gone like it did.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I should be asking them to even pay me for the technician that came here that found out all the problems or just let it lie.
Look, all I want to say is there is a benefit from working with a reputable company. And, you know, just talking to them shows how much they stand by their service. And that's unfortunately not the case with a lot of companies that we hear about or know about. So already you are coming up on top.
We can't always.
I mean, exactly. So that's great news. You're gonna save thousands of dollars just because they, you know, they are stepping up and doing what needs to be done. Now, having said that, just to also be fair to the other party as well. We usually say that compressors don't fail. That's the norm after 1 year of installation, okay?
Yeah.
But there has been instances in the past where there was a lemon every now and then, and yes, it was the compressor that failed and had nothing to do with the labor. So we just want to make sure that, you know, and that in that case, you can't really hold them responsible. The fact that this was maybe in a gray area and they kind of pushed it more towards the consumer side is an amazing news to you.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, it is a gray zone. Let it be. That's great that they actually took charge of that. So,
well, with that,
already you're coming up on top.
Yeah. So just let the tech fly. Okay. My next thing, we're doing a big driveway. And we have grates. I think they're called grates. 8 feet long, 10 feet wide, and a foot deep. I just want to know, should they be separated, like one per garage door? I have a double garage. Should they be? You know,
I don't understand what. No, I don't know.
Or a reservoir for water, you know? At the bottom of the driveway. At the bottom of the driveway.
You mean like a drain?
Well, they're 8 feet long, same with steel. And
okay.
What I want to know is how far should it be from my sill or my foundation? And they have to go down, you know, because they have to asphalt it, but come even. So I find they're not down far enough.
I'm sorry, I really don't understand the question. You're saying that there's a drain.
If I
understand you correctly, it's a linear drain in front of your garage door.
I have 2 8-foot grates, they call them.
Okay.
That can hold a lot of water. Now, they're 8 feet long. So I'm just wondering, should one be in front of one garage and the other one in front of the other garage? Like, they haven't butted together.
They have them butted together.
Well, together, So I'm just wondering.
Well, usually,
go on.
Usually, we want to put them in front of the garage because that's the area we don't want to water the garage door,
exactly.
I should say.
So
and we don't want the water to get it.
And they should be separated, right? 8 feet and 8 feet right now. Okay, made of clay, but they're all broken up. And they didn't replace it. We just put crushed stone on top of it. With these grates there, that'll stop the water because we have two French drains under that, under 3 feet of stone.
With three quarter
clean stone. So my question is, how far should they go down from my entry for the garage? 3-4 inches, 5 inches?
Now, why would you have trench drain on a, I don't understand, on a garage foundation? That doesn't make sense. You're going...
Yeah, but the first drain was 4 feet down. They dug up, and it was all broken up. It was made of clay. That was just 57 years old. So,
Ron, let me jump in here. Walter, we're just going to put it on pause because we're going to get the traffic and come right back. Let me put them on hold.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
922, Walter Assey from Inovco is on the line to answer your calls. We're going to go back to Ron. Ron, we need to wrap this up quickly. We have a lot of people on the phone.
Okay, Walter, when I say grades, I'm talking about like a reservoir is 8 feet. It should, like you said, they should be in front of both.
Yeah. It's a grate with a T.
And it's at the bottom with the French drains underneath, there's a lot of dirt, a lot of crushed stone. Now, the thing is, what I want to know is, how low should we go by the entrance to the garage? Because they have to asphalt it after, and that those two have to be clean.
2 millimeters below, where you want to go is about 2 millimeters from your surrounding flooring. That's the ideal measurement. As far as the concrete bedding, you need about 100 millimeters of concrete as a bedding for it from the bottom. But usually, just to kind of orient you within the 2 millimeter range, you should be fine.
Okay, and that way, when they do the asphalt, that's going to be flush?
Not flush. You want to be about 2 millimeters off. Flush is not really usually, you know, this is the... usually they know, and you could actually even test it as soon as they finish. You just open a hose and see if the water is flowing nicely.
When I have
but
it
usually
open,
you want to be a bit low. Yeah,
when I have it open, should I put another hose there to go like to my sewer thing? Now it's covered over, but I have some pumps going.
Another hose, what do you mean? What do you mean, like another hose?
Where are my garage doors, 8 feet, 8 feet? I'll have a space in between. Should I put some kind of hose there that go into my hole? That goes, just in case it's an overflow. Apparently, it shouldn't do it, any overflow.
No, it shouldn't. I don't think that would be necessary at all.
Okay.
It's well done. You should not have any problems. Especially, let me say this.
Yeah, can I give a shout out to Passages? AM?
You just did, Ron. Listen, good luck with the project. We got to run. Ron? He's gone. All right. Sorry about that, Walter, but he was on for about 8 minutes, and we have so many people waiting to talk to you. We're going to go here to Werner. Hi, Werner.
Oh, yeah. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You want to talk about your carport?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Go ahead.
The carport, you know, is attached on one side, of course, to the house, and the other side, the outside is supported by three wooden beams, you know, on a cement foundation. And I noticed already last year, one of the front posts especially, it's leaning towards the outside. The carport is about 9.5 feet high. And I measured it, you know, it's about 3 inches or so difference between the top of the post and the bottom, that it leans to the outside. Now, the supports, they're 2.5 by 5 inch wooden things, wooden boards, two of them put together on all three of the supporting posts. Okay, so my worry is that it's maybe leaning too much to one side, the first post especially. So what can I do about it to get it straight?
So the first thing is the concrete, those wooden columns that you're talking about, or wooden beams, are they sitting straight on the concrete sonotube?
Yeah, they're sitting pretty straight, yeah.
No, that's not the question. Are they touching the concrete? Is the wood touching the concrete?
Yeah, they're touching the concrete, yeah.
Okay. So there's no, they have not installed anything to separate the wood from the concrete. It's just
no.
Wood over concrete.
Wood is straight on the concrete, yeah.
Okay, so that's the first mistake, because usually with years and with time, that wood would start rotting. And that's the worst place where you want your column to start rotting, because that's where the load is being carried.
Right.
Underneath specifically. So we want to make sure that that doesn't happen in whatever repair job that you do to that beam, to that column.
Right.
Having said that, you also want to see how deep they went with their foundation, because it is often seen that those foundations do not go deep enough, or those sonotubes, and they crack and they move with time, and they create the structural movement.
Okay.
You can do that only for that beam. You just need to temporarily shore up and support that part of the carport. So you build a temporary structure, it carries a load, and then we could dig down that foundation, re-pour it, and then you will put, I mean, you could put a 6x6 type of a beam that comes the full length.
Right.
And that's much stronger. And obviously we will make sure that we'll have separation between that beam and the concrete this time, so you don't have the same problem.
Okay. Now, my next question is, what kind of company should I contact? You don't have to give me a name, John.
It is a good question, though, because there are different things involved. Any carpentry framing companies should be able to assist. They might not want to be doing the concrete work, and that will you will have to get two different companies, or you can get one general contractor that can run both at the same time. So a framer typically will do the temporary support for you and the shoring up. But he might say, you know what, I don't have an excavator, I don't do concrete, and you might have to get someone that does concrete work and then re-pour
foundation.
Now, having said that, you could also go with a technopure type foundation as well. So there, you have options if you are replacing that. But if you have one sonotube, if you have two other columns that are good, and they are made out of sonotube, then by all means, have them all match because of cosmetic reasons as well.
Okay.
A general contractor will usually do the trick. Specialized in framing and carpentry.
Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Warner.
Bye.
Good call there. All right. It's coming up on a news time, 514-790-0800. Full forecast on this Saturday ready for you right after the news. And then we're going to come back. Thank you for your patience, Simon, Kathleen, Edward, and Jay. They're all ready to go right on the other side here on the Home Improvement Show.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
At 9:35, Ken Connors along with Walter Assey from Renovco, Ben Lange in Master Control answering the calls. Let's get right back to the phone and thank Simon for his patience. Simon is in Lachine. Good morning, Simon.
Hi, Walter and Ken.
Good morning.
Hi. Okay, I've got water that falls from my bathroom ceiling. Now, this started with water falling from the vent on top of the bathtub. So I called the landlord, janitor came over. He said, it's all dry. I can't do anything. That was 10 years ago. Then it started falling from the ceiling as well as the vent. So he came back, said the same thing. Can't do anything. It's all dry. Anyway, now I've got these large pieces of paint that are peeling from the ceiling from the water. And it was a couple of days ago, there was water drops in the bathtub, and there was water drops in the ceiling. So I took a towel, and I just wiped the water on the ceiling, and it made a hole. So my question is it true that there's nothing that he can do about it?
That's absolutely not true. That's absolutely false.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, that's where most of the time we run into issues where mold have formed.
Okay.
Because people tend to ignore a one-time leak or a two-time leak, and they see that it visually started drying up. But that doesn't mean that the mold is not starting to form.
Okay.
As soon as you have a water damage of any kind, you need to take measures to mechanically dry it within 24 to 48 hours.
Okay.
And that's often ignored, specifically if they find that it did not do a lot of intrusive issues, you know, if the ceiling did not fall down or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So that's to be avoided. So that's number one. It's definitely false. There's a lot that could be done, not because a material have dried that did not create mold. As a matter of fact, mold will start forming 24 to 48 hours after a water damage, if not dried. And, you know, the more you're going to keep the material wet, especially in the case of a drywall, it absorbs the water. The backing of the drywall is made out of paper, and that's what usually catches the mold. So it's the worst area where the drywall can really get the water. So that's number one. Number two, it becomes also an issue of, you know, the rigidity of the ceiling, especially when you're going to have repeated types of damages, and you have electrical there, and you have a fan, and you have spotlights, and so on and so forth. So that have to also be looked at. When you have repetitive damages, a lot of times, especially through the fans or through the spotlights, you know, you can get circuits that get rusted and the connections get rusted, and that could create other electrical issues as well. So there's a lot that you need to look at. I would definitely send him a letter of demand, and I would ask him to, number one, cosmetically, he needs to take care of his apartment, and that's not pleasing to you, I'm sure. Number two, this problem seems to be coming back. So you need to go to the source of the problem, see what's really going on. You might need to visit your, you know, your neighbor upstairs and see, is the bathroom very old? Is there grout on the ceramics? Is there caulking or any reason that could leak, could lead to leaking? Now, the good news for you, it's not continuous. Meaning if it doesn't happen every day, it's usually not a plumbing or a feed plumbing issue, because it's been like a broken pipe, then would have leaked all the time.
Okay.
And the ceiling would have eventually, you know, fell off. But so I don't think that's the issue. Could be a drainage issue, or it could be just a water membraning issue, meaning that the ceramic is too old, the grout, the cracks in the ceramic, lack of silicone, and so on and so forth. And that's what you would need to look at. So it might be just an easy, quick fix, but, you know, they have to be a bit more proactive solving that issue.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, well, the problem doesn't happen every day. It might happen twice in a week, and then nothing for a year, and then it's like
that's right. Okay. So that usually is indicative of either the tenant taking showers and, you know, spreading the water around in all kind of areas, or tub overflow, or, you know, just being uncareful, or it's just a lack of silicone and it, you know, it's just seepage or lack of maintenance around the tile wall. Seepage, typically what happens is small amounts of water that just gets behind the wall, and it takes a long time before it creates important quantities of water that it gives it the chance to protrude through to your apartment. That's typical to these types of damage. That's why you don't see it often. It's probably because it's simply that the bathroom upstairs is too old, and it's time now to take care of it, or to put some type of even acrylic walls around, like some bath fitter type product, just to make it a bit more waterproof.
Okay, so I'll take your advice. I'll send the letter of demand. And it's been going on for 10 years, so it's high time that they do something.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
You're a very patient man, that's for sure. Thank you, sir.
Good luck, Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you. 9:40, we're going to go straight to Kathleen in Chattagay. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks for waiting. You want to talk about, what, air conditioning versus heat pump?
No, it's, I actually have two questions. I received a couple of quotes. One was for a ductless air conditioning unit with thermal pump to be placed in a hallway. And the second was a ceiling ductless air conditioning unit with a thermal pump. And the second quote, the person had said that he would not suggest putting the ductless air conditioner unit in the hallway because it would not remove the humidity from the house. I'm a novice of this, and I'd like to have your opinion.
Well, where you place a unit, usually the air conditioning technician should be picking the best location in the house to give you the best type of spread of air conditioning. Now, the good news for you is that if you put the ceiling, the split unit high up, cold air comes down, and that's a good thing. So that will definitely help. Any type of air conditioning anywhere you put in the house should help the humidity. Just strategically speaking, is how much it's going to spread to all the other rooms. Often you see that they look more for their easier type installation. So they want to put it in a place where it's really easy for them, and they don't really take the time to look at the whole house and say, okay, well, you maybe at that location is better than this location. That's something that you should also look into yourself. If the unit is not, if you find that it's not going to be spreading into the, you know, most of the areas, it's mostly central, let's say, then it's probably not a good location. So the location really, it doesn't matter if it's a hallway or a bedroom. Sometimes you can put it in an upstairs hallway, and it's the best location to spread around the whole house. You know, depending if you have a cottage or a bungalow or so on and so forth. It's just, you know, honestly, it's just common sense and logic. There's nothing more to it. Now, having said that, there are units, split units, that you can have two different ducts, meaning you could, you know, if you have two floors, you could put one that, you know, cool off the second floor, another one, the bottom floor, or can, you know, put one in your bedroom and one in your living room, and that should take care of the majority of your home. That's also another option that you could look into.
Can you tell me if it matters if the air conditioner, this particular unit, has up and down and side to side, if that makes a difference?
No, it shouldn't make a difference.
Okay. My second question very quickly is, I have a garage door, an automatic garage door, where it opens very well with the remote, but for some reason it will not close. Can you give me advice on that?
Wow. Okay. That's the first. So it opens, but it does not close the same remote?
I have to physically get out of the car and use the button inside the garage in order to close the garage door.
Hmm. Okay. That's the first for me. I've never heard about that before. I can't really tell you what you could do yourself, to be quite frank with you, but you know, how old is the garage opener?
About 15 years old, and I just recently changed the batteries thinking it was that.
Yeah.
No, if it doesn't, usually it's the batteries, it would not open, it would not close, it would not, you know, not do one or the other. What you could do is just call, you know, any of these garage door companies. It might be a programming thing with your remote, maybe, potentially, or something is, I don't know. I can't really tell you what it could be. It's a bit of a mystery to me like that, just like that. But if you call a garage company, usually you explain the situation on the phone, they might guide you through it.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Thank you, Kathleen. Appreciate the call. It's 9:45. We're going to break here, as always, and come right back with more of the calls and Walter.
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
A lot of times that's the case. Let's get right to the phone and say hello to Edward, who's been waiting in Longueuil. Hi, Edward.
Thank you, Ken. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Go ahead.
John Walter, it's my friend's tar and gravel roof was a new membrane roof was installed last fall. Now the installer said that they will not have to worry about debris and all because being more or less he removed all the walls from the side and made it like a kind of side. So I went up and examined it. But my friend came home one night and there was water coming down after that big thaw, you know. And he called those guys who had gave him guarantee. They came and removed a lot of debris, leaves, and he promised that there would be no need to do that. Now, a question for you is, I looked and there was a gooseneck, one big gooseneck, and a lot of pipes, you know, that are ringing in the air and all for plumbing. Is there some caulking that is required on each of them at the bottom? Because he had a lot of water. About 5 buckets of water came down, you know.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, it is not true that you don't need to maintain any type of flat roof, okay? The issue with flat roof is mainly the drains. And when you have landscape around you, trees and things that could lead to debris accumulation on your drains, leaves and what have you, that could block your drain and that could create a swimming pool effect on your roof.
Exactly.
So
that's what
it is. Yes, that's exactly. So that's where I disagree with the people that said you don't have to maintain. You have to maintain any type of roof for that matter. Okay, so we just have to be clear on that, specifically around the drain area. Okay, and you really don't want that drain to block, because you know there is a misconception that when the drain drops and blocks, and when you have an accumulation of sometimes up to 1 foot, 2 feet of water, that you just go and run and unplug that drain. And what happens is that there will be so much water that comes in that will back up in your house and create you a much bigger issue.
Right.
So that's why we want to ensure that that drain is always a great functional, clean mode. And, you know, again, it's in the crucial times where the springtime, the fall time, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Right after the leaves have dropped. Okay. Now, having said that, just to answer, yeah. Okay. Again, the word caulking and roofs, or the word caulking or anything for that matter, I'm totally against. I keep on saying that. If you have proper flashing, you should not, the caulking should not be, again, the caulking is the last line of defense, meaning it should not really be just an additional precautionary measure. So, you know, if you have a proper flashing, then the caulking is not really what's going to protect you. Okay, it's the proper flashing around the elements.
What's the flashing?
It's that those metal pieces that you put around drains or around the brick walls or what have you. Okay.
Right.
What you need to also look for where you have these types of damages is where did the water come from? Because sometimes it could be coming from the flashing on top, the parapet wall area where it have a cap, flashing cap, and that could be where water comes from. But again, it's usually...
I measured, and it was 18 feet okay. from the wall, from the window. When I went up on the roof, it was 18 feet from the window to the drain. It was the drain, around the drain, that the water was coming down from.
Okay. So that's usually you could have had potentially a blocked drain and found its way, created the swimming pool effect, and that really tests your roof to any weakness that they have. Having said that, you said that they came, and what did they do exactly when they...
Okay, the guy went up. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. He went up and he removed all the debris, like a bird's nest. He removed that and he dropped it down. There were like cones and leaves and twigs and stuff like that. Because I used to do that for him, tar and gravel roof, because he's a heart patient. And I used to do it every fall. And I used to go and remove all this debris.
Yeah.
But this time, there were a lot of cones, you know, from the neighbor's spruce tree, pine tree, and twigs and all that. And he removed all that. And when I went to examine it last week, the roof was completely dry and there was no debris at all.
Yeah. So the only roof between the tar and gravel and the elastomeric type roofing is that you don't need to maintain the gravel aspect of it and add gravel. And, you know, when gravel flies around, you have to. That's the only real difference, and the weight as well. I mean, it's a much lighter roofing system. It's not really the less maintenance. It is less maintenance because you don't have to deal with the gravel factor, but the drain is something that you always have to maintain for sure.
Okay.
He also removed
a lot of goosenecks, there were 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah.
But when I went up, there were only 2.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Edward.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Ken.
Yeah?
Ken, just as a footnote, you're blessed. Sometimes you're blessed to have guys around you that are experts in different things. My garage technician reached out to me for the previous caller.
Oh, yeah.
But the question, and that's awesome. So he just answered me. He said that the problem usually is either due to a blocked pass between the sensors, dirty safety eyes, loose wires at the sensors or at the motor heads, bad sensors or bad motor control board. The transmitters will not work to close the garage if any of these issues are present. So at least we now have an answer, and that's something that it's good for me to know because I didn't see that issue happen before, but you see it could happen as such, and we have the answer for that previous caller.
Yeah, that was Kathleen in Chateauguay. And by the way, Walter, yes, you got word, and so did we here in the studio. Mark, thank you for the phone call as well. He said he had the same problem, and it was just a question of, like you said, Walter, his sensors were not aligned, and it was as simple as that. So you're on the right track there when you told her. Maybe call one of the garage door experts, and they could
I can't take credit for that. It's my garage door technician that told me that, but it's good to know. It's great to know.
All right, Walter, you enjoy yourself. Rest easy, and we'll talk to you back here in the studio next week. How's that?
My pleasure, sir, and definitely looking forward to being in studio next week.
All right, that's Walter Assey from Inovco. It's 2 minutes to go before 10 o'clock. We'll get you up to date from the newsroom with Don Kagan Fleming in just a second. And Lisa Christensen is in the building, and she's raring to go, answering all your phone calls about your car, your vehicle issues. That's coming up next. You're on CJAD 800.